Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
And we go a little something like this. Hit it. I dig it. Come on. Bar, and I'm looking for some action, but like Mick Jagger said, I can't get no satisfaction. The girls are all around, but none of them want to get with me. My threads are fresh, and I'm looking deaf. Yo, what's up with L.O.C.? The girls are all jocking at the other end of the bar, having drinks with some no-name chump when they know that I'm a star. So I got them, the show's over, to the other side of the cantina. I asked the guy, why you so fly? He said, Funky Cole Medina.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again. It's that time again, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And sit back, relax, either jump on the phone or jump on your PC. If you're on your PC, you're listening to me. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master, and at this time, always on a Sunday morning, it's The Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be. If you want to talk to the one and only, you know what I'm going to say, me. We got a great show in store for you today. We're going to be talking about the NCAA Men's Championship. Also talking about a historic thing that happened in the NCAA basketball tournament, but it's not going to be the men's. And we're also going to be talking about what is going to happen, or what I think is going to happen today. Two matchups of two unlikely teams, and two teams that most people thought they would come to this point in the Elite Eight, this portion of the Elite Eight, and what I think is going to happen, and to set up the Final Four. Like I said, we also have a chat room sitting out there. Ask a question, make a comment, a statement. Do your thing in that chat room. Remember, what you put in it is what you get out of it. You come foul, you're going to get foul out. That's all I got to say. I'm just keeping it real here. This is real Sunday, the last Sunday in March. Like I said, starting next Sunday, which is the first Sunday in April, labeling April. Draft April, draft day April, because at the last day of April, which is April 30th, like I said yesterday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the FSP show, the April 30th starts the 2015 NFL Draft, where we're going to see a good, very good class of players that are coming out of the college ranks, hoping to get locked onto a team that can help that team improve one way or the other. It may even help them get to the Super Bowl. Who knows? Anything's happening. Anything can happen in the NFL. If you believe, you can achieve. That's all I can tell you. So without further ado, let's get to it. And where do I start? Because the games yesterday were some really good games. We had the two teams from the West and the two teams from the Midwest give us some very good games that one better than the other. One, in my opinion, in my opinion, and for most people, We're a little bit surprised. We're a little surprised. Not very surprised. We're a little surprised. And the other one, I wasn't surprised at all. In fact, I picked it like that. And we'll go into them. Like I said, it's March Madness at its best, turning on into April and the Final Four, which is going to happen, which is going to be locked in after the four teams and two games that play today. We'll know who are all the participants will be in the Final Four, which is going to be played next weekend with the champion in the NCAA men's basketball to be crowned April 6th on Monday. So we're winding down to end this season of college basketball, but the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat are still strong yesterday, and we're looking forward to the games that are going to be played today. So without further ado, you know what? Before I get into the men's, how about we drift over into the women's basketball tournament, the NCAA tournament. And talk about that for a minute. And see what happens there. How about we go to their bracket? And then, because I haven't talked about women's basketball that briefly, and I think I want to talk about it today briefly, because the fact is it's coming down to the Elite Eight and eventually the Final Four. So I think it's time to talk about the women's bracket. Now, right now, they're at the Sweet 16, and the Elite Eight will be decided today and Monday. But there's one thing I wanted to get out here that, and I told you about something that is historic, and it didn't happen in the men's tournament, it happened in the women's tournament, that number one seed in the Albany bracket. See, in the women's, it's not north, it's not south, Midwest, and west. That's men's brackets. In the women's NCAA tournament, they list them by cities. So the Albany is one bracket, Oklahoma City is another bracket, Spokane, Washington is another bracket, and quite naturally, Greensboro in Carolina is another bracket. So the very number one seed, not just in the bracket in Albany, but in the whole tournament, in my opinion, is Connecticut, who's only lost one game, but they're the number one seed, and there are no unbeaten teams in women's basketball. There are no unbeaten teams in women's basketball. Everybody has at least one loss. Connecticut is the rated number one, and they went up against the eighth seed in the Albany bracket, Rutgers. And they set They went up against Texas, and they set a NCAA tournament record of beating their opponent. First of all, when you have a college team score over 100 points, that's noteworthy. That's newsworthy, too. But when you have a college team that scores 105 points and they completely annihilate the number five seed. Now, we're not talking about the first round when number one Connecticut plays 16 St. Francis. We're talking about the number five seed getting beat by the number one seed, 105. Yes, I said 105. This is a women's game. 105. And how many times do you see women get to 105 points in a game? And they hold their opponent. Check this out. This is how good, in my opinion, Connecticut is compared to especially the teams in the Albany bracket. First of all, they play the first round of their tournament. And quite naturally, the one seed always plays the 16 seed. What happens to be a sacrificial lamb in this case, St. Francis of Brooklyn, and they beat them 89-33. Yeah, you heard me right, 89-33. Okay, they're expected to beat them. Maybe not bad, but they're expected to beat them. Most people can accept that. Then they play the eighth seed. Rutgers. Okay, Rutgers is a pretty decent team. They're the eighth seed. Not the high seed, but they're the eighth seed, which is what it is. And they beat them. They went from 89 to 91 points they scored and held Rutgers to 55 points. Newsworthy and noteworthy. Then they turn around in the next round. And you would think that it would be a more competitive game because now they're going up against a five seed in Texas. And Texas, in my opinion, has been battle-tested because in order for Texas to get to where they had in the 5-12 matchup that Texas had in the first round, Texas being a five seed, they would only win by 2 points. Okay, understandable. It happens. Anything can happen in these brackets. And number 12, Western Kentucky, who played Texas in the first round, got beat by 2 points. Texas moves on and plays number 4 or 5. Now, these number 4 or 5s, 5 being Texas seed, 4 being California, University of California, that's why they're 4, 5, 8, 9, things like that. Very good matchups. Teams mirror each other for the most part. Same skill set. For the most part, these teams are going to battle. And whoever, it's quite natural, whoever doesn't turn the ball over and makes the least amount of mistakes and plays better defense and offense is going to win the game. Simple stuff. Sounds simple, but a lot of teams can't do all that, and some teams do part of it, and that's why they lose. But number 4, California, goes down to number 5, Texas, 73-70, which sets up the matchup of number 5, Texas, going up against the women. This is a women's tournament. Number 1, Connecticut. Now, Connecticut has scored 91 to win. Texas has scored 66 and 73 to win their games. But quite naturally, Texas matchups are a lot tougher than Connecticut. So, naturally, if Connecticut worthy of being the number one seed, they should win their matchups a lot easier going against a lot lower seeds. While Texas has to meet up against just about the same type of seeds they have, and it's going to be a tougher road. So this brings up this matchup, and the reason I'm bringing up this matchup is this. You would think that I'm not going to give you the score yet, but and you probably know the score, but I this is the reason why I'm bringing it up. You would think that because Texas has been battle-tested, even though it may be lesser talent, but they're battle tested, meaning and they're ready to go up against the big boy in their bracket in Connecticut. that they would play tougher defense and be able to play a very good fight before going down to Connecticut. Because I don't think anybody gave them a shot, even though they're the 5 seed against Connecticut because of the skill level between the two teams. Well, no one expected Connecticut to come up with a score of 105-4. 105-54. They damn near doubled them. And they beat them by 51 points in the third round of the playoffs. 51 points. Absolutely destroyed them. Oriyama, his team looked like they played the perfect game. Everything that could possibly go right for UConn, the women's UConn, went right. Right from the start, their shots were going in, and they were being aggressive. Texas has a big presence inside, but big post players. But UConn got them moving a little bit, and it seemed like they could get any shot they wanted. The women Huskies shot 56% from the field. You know, and to think this, midway through the first half, UConn was leading 26-19, which is only winning by 7 points midway through the first half. Before they went on a 44-9 run going into halftime. Started with a 13-point burst by the Huskies. So at halftime, excuse me. So at halftime, UConn led 52-24. And then going into the first 3 minutes and 30 seconds of the second half, scored 18 points. So 44-9. So they scored 63 points from the midway of the first half to 3 minutes and 30 seconds of the second half. Unbelievable. And to think about it, this, I don't know if it was Sweet 16 jitters because Texas was making its first trip to the Sweet 16 since 2004. I don't know if it was because of the young roster and I don't know. But the Longhorns hadn't beat UConn in 6 meetings, including 3 games in the NCAA tournament. Oriyama got his 100th win. And in the NCAA tournament, that's a lot of wins. Some people don't even get to play in the NCAA tournament ever or play a couple of games. He's won 100 games in the NCAA tournament since he's been coaching UConn basketball. You just don't do that by mistake. I just had to say that because of that, but I just had to talk about UConn and what they have done up to this point. I can't say it's a foregone conclusion because you never know. You still have to play the games. The next game they play, which is next Monday, could be the worst game they ever played, and it could get knocked out of the tournament. So, and that could be in both NCAA tournaments. It could be men's and women's brackets. But what I'm talking about is this, that the University of UConn women are a force like you don't know, like a force that is to be reckoned with to this year. Not like it's not every year, but they look like they're on a serious mission. Only had one hiccup, one loss, and they look like they look like they're really waiting, ready to take it to the next level and try to get one more NCAA women's championship trophy to put in the trophy case for Geno and make history of their own again. This is, wow. Well, all I can say, you know, players doesn't guarantee you that you're going to win. It guarantees you that you have a chance to win if you coach them right. That's because you have good players. If you don't coach them right, push the right buttons, put them in the right place to succeed, they won't. And they won't. Meaning they won't play for you, and you won't succeed. So you have to know how to players, and you have to know how to put them in good positions in order for them to believe and to succeed. And there's no doubt about it. Geno knows how to do that. 100 wins in the NCAA tournament, that's a lot of damn wins. Whether it's male or female. Wow. 51 points against the number 5 seed in that bracket. Wow. All right. You got about 35 minutes left in the show. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be. You want to talk to me? We'll be right back after these messages.
Thursday night is the right time to kick back and listen to the FSP Crew Show as they break down the weekend sports and prepare you for Thursday night football. 8 p.m. Eastern, just before the game starts, Jerry the Master Taylor hosts the show with Jeff the Joker Goldberg and Mike the Bookie Monster Wright. The three gentlemen debate and discuss a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything on the FSP Crew Show every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
Victor Gardner began the Fantasy Sports and Politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FSP himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP Show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/DICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
All right. We're going to be transitioning on now. I talked about the women's basketball, especially UConn. And we're going to be talking about the men's bracket. And specifically right now, what took place yesterday. They had four teams playing, two teams that were going to move on to the Final Four, which is going to take place next weekend. Number one seed, Wisconsin, against the number two seed, Arizona. And the number one seed in the Midwest would be University of Kentucky against the number three seed in the University of Notre Dame. One took place, the first matchup, like I talked about, was Wisconsin versus Arizona. And Sam Decker hit five of Wisconsin's 10 three-pointers in the second half on his way to second straight career high of 27 points. Frank Kaminsky added 29 points. And the number one seeded Wisconsin Badgers beat number two Arizona 85-78 on Saturday to reach their second, to reach the consecutive Final Four for the first time in school history. The Arizona Wildcats got within 5 points twice in the last 2.5 minutes, but both times Sam Decker connected on some three-pointer and narrowly beating the shot clock on the first one. Now, I saw the second one. And it was a rainbow. I'm talking about a rainbow. And the thing about it, when he shot it from in front of the Wisconsin bench, if I'm not mistaken, yes, it was in front of the Wisconsin bench, he did a Stephon Curry. He shot it, and he walked away. And it went in, nothing but net, nothing else. Sam Decker confirmed that the Badgers are more than just Frank the Tank, meaning Frank Kaminsky. He had previously in the game before against North Carolina scored 23 points and 10 rebounds over North Carolina with the same timely shooting that he did that bailed out the Wisconsin. One of the things that And for those who know that Aaron Rodgers, quite naturally, is a Green Bay Packer and he follows the University of Wisconsin. He didn't go there, but he follows it because it's in-state. He was in attendance. He tweeted out that Sam Decker was cold-blooded. Now, I have a tattoo on my left arm, upper right arm. And that's what my tattoo says, cold-blooded. And I got to believe it. I watched that game, and Arizona seemed like they had control of that game at one point. But lost control of it. And halfway through the second half, I would say, probably halfway through the second half of that, with, like I said, with Decker and Kaminsky. And that caused them to lose the game by 7 points, 85-78, something like that. Now, Wisconsin finds himself down this road before, having a Final Four matchup with Kentucky. Will be their third rematch from last year. They're already eliminated Oregon and Arizona each of the last two seasons, but looked to turn the table after losing to the Wildcats, because quite naturally Wildcats went to the finals last year, get beat by University of Connecticut Mets. And they're going to be looking to overturn that or turn it around from what happened to them last year. Sam Decker said that the loss last season left a sour taste in their mouth, and they wanted to get back to avenge that one-point loss to Kentucky. And now they'll have their chance. Now, the coach, Bo Ryan, is a one – you know, look at the coaches, and I said this yesterday. Look at the coaches that are coaching the Elite Eight teams and the eventual Final Four teams. Okay? Right now, we have two of the four participants that are going to be in the Final Four. One is John Calipari. The other is Bo Ryan. The other side, the four coaches that are coaching in the other set of games over in the East and in the South, go from the top. Louisville, Rick Pitino. He's won a national championship before. Tom Izzo. He's won a national championship before. You got Krzyzewski. You think he's won a title before? And then you have, and I think this guy gets no respect, but he should, because he's brought this program out of the doldrums. And I'm talking about the coach of the Gonzaga basketball team. So what do you think? This is an accident? What do you think that these guys are not flat? Do you think they're flash in the pans? They get here for a reason. Because of coaching. Because of coaching. And it doesn't come easy. Does not come easy. So what do you think? Who do you think is going to? So let's move on to the and talk about the game that was a game, that was hell of a game. I watched this game. You know what? This is the truth here. I was watching this game, and in my bracket, I had quite naturally, like a lot of people, had Kentucky in their bracket versus Notre Dame. And let me tell you something, people. Early in this game, it did not look good for Kentucky. And in fact, for the most of this game, it did not look good for Kentucky. Did not look good for Kentucky. And I honestly thought this was going to be the end of the road for Kentucky, because this team, I'm talking about Notre Dame, gave Kentucky fits. Jerry and Grant gave Kentucky fits. Big shot after big shot. Gave him fits. They didn't know what to do with him. Auguste gave him fits also. Steve Basturia gave him fits. Those three guys were in double figures. Grant for 15 points. Augusta for 20, and Vasturia for 16. Gave him fits. And the defense, up until I would say halfway through the second half, then the Wildcats made their last nine shots. They made their last nine shots. 6 seconds left in the game. Kentucky had the ball, and Andrew Harrison had the ball. Drove the lane, got fouled, and it was tied up. It was tied up 66. Made two free throws, giving Kentucky the win and lead. Jaren Grant drove down the in the game. Two Kentucky Wildcats following him as he went up for a shot. Three of them, one at a time, went up with him. The first one flying past him. The second one going up to try to disrupt his shot. And the third one, after the second one, passed Jerry Grant because he was running, came up and tried to block the shot. Fortunately for the University of Kentucky, which would have been an apropos and a dramatic win if it had gone in, the high-arcing attempt at a three-pointer sailed over the basket without touching the rim at all, caught by a Kentucky Wildcat player, and the proverbial game was over. Now, after the game was over, John Calipari was interviewed. Quite naturally, the players of each team and their coaches get interviewed post-game and to give their thoughts. Very rough for the players who lost of Notre Dame to give their post-game interviews. The coach is a little bit more seasoned. And he gave his post-game interview. And after all that was over, anyone who has watched Kentucky men's basketball team play this season would likely say the Wildcats faced their toughest test of the season last night. And like I said, Notre Dame played crazy, ridiculously well. The atmosphere was incredible. There were 20 lead changes. And in the end, it took, like I said, two free throws by Andrew Harrison to finally seal it. So when John Calipari gets up in front of the mic and gets interviewed and says that it was one hell of a game, that played, and asked Calipari, was this the most toughest obstacle that they faced on their 38-0 run so far? John Calipari disagreed. He said no. He said his team, 38-0, has been tested a lot this season. He said, we played poorly. Instead of giving some credit to Notre Dame, comments, it didn't go over well with the Notre Dame fans, and really everyone not rooting for Kentucky. Media members, fans, and athletes all weighed in over Twitter to call Calipari classless. Now, what do you think? Should he have been praising Notre Dame more in his post-game interview? Or was he right in what he's saying? They didn't play well. And is the reason they didn't play well because they were playing Notre Dame, and Notre Dame had a good game plan, a defensive game plan to offset the what Kentucky had to offer? Give us some tweets here. Guy named John Derry. Calipari is a classless clown. This is a tweet. Is a classless clown. We're saying they played bad and Notre Dame played great after he beats them. Guy cheats and has no class. Hashtag thumbs down Kentucky. Denny Thompson tweets in and says, by the way, classless yet typical post-game interview by Calipari. Why take away the Notre Dame effort by saying your team played poorly? Melissa Kuhar. This is just random tweets here I'm talking about. Calipari's post-game interview is how not to do it. Give credit to your opponent when it is deserved. Hashtag classless. Kyle Featherton. Calipari is so classless. Notre Dame just gave you all you could handle. And when they ask about your performance, you say, we played poorly. Corey Briggs. Really, Calipari? We had a bad game. They played great. Give Notre Dame the credit they deserve. Hashtag again, classless. Tony Segretto. Why can't John Calipari be classy? He just can't give the other team any credit. Quite naturally, it's not hashtag, but it says classless. Here's a Notre Dame fan. So I'm not saying these are Notre Dame fans, and I'm not saying. I'm just giving you some tweets out there that what was out there when Calipari said that that wasn't the toughest matchup we had. We played poorly. Ted Corley. Hashtag Ted Corley. Let me put it this way. I can see he's a Notre Dame fan. Let me put it that way. John Calipari is a classless act. Post-game comments were as disrespectful as I've ever seen. Cody Howard. This is why I hate Calipari. He says they didn't play good and doesn't give credit to Notre Dame. Get out of here with that. Another one that came out with the hashtag, classless. How about Mike Golic Jr.? He played for football for the University of Notre Dame. Usually I'm not down on Coach Cal, but he sounded very hateable in that interview. Blake Courtney. Calipari with the ultimate arrogant post-game interview. It's way too easy to hate him. No wonder he isn't respected. Pam Shriver. And I think this is the Pam Shriver that's a tennis player, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure it is. Former tennis player. Did anyone else find Calipari's post-win interview really obnoxious? You barely win, and you can't first give credit to opponent's great play? What do you think? You're out there. What do you think? Now, first of all, it's in my opinion, it's game interview coach 101. Is to praise your opponent. Plain and simple. Praise your opponent. Regardless if you think your team didn't play well or not, you praise your opponent, especially if you win and they lose, and it's a close game. Regardless if it's a close game or not, you still praise your opponent. That's post-game etiquette 101 for a coach. I don't understand, but I do understand, because of John Calipari. And it could be the moment. It could be that, well, his team didn't play well. Okay. But that could be because of the play, especially on the defensive end. of Notre Dame. Okay? You didn't impose your will. You were fortunate enough, and I have to say this because I watched the game. I watched the game. You were fortunate enough to put yourself, let's just say, you put your players in a position to win the game. Things went your way. You played good enough defense, well enough defense to hold your opponent from scoring, and you scored the last 9 points in the game. You were fortunate enough to do that. Not in the last 9 points, but you scored the last 9 baskets, including the last 2 points in the game, and you were fortunate enough to do that. Notre Dame had some opportunities, missed some shots they could have made. Probably if they were earlier in the game, they would have made those shots. But because even the coach admitted that his team, because he has a limited rotation, were worn down, were tired, and that the reason why he used up so many, all of his timeouts to try to give as much rest to his players down the stretch as he could possibly do it. Unfortunately, he ran out of timeouts and it hurt. It's going to hurt for a while. When you lose a tournament game, when it's one and done, it hurts during the regular season, but even hurts even more because you know the finality of it. That once you lose in a tournament, you're done. There's no going back. There's no other games, especially if you're a senior. There's no other games. This is it. The end of your college career is over. And reality sits in. If you're not good enough to make it to the NBA, then you got to get a job in the real world. That college life is over. Especially playing wise. And it hurts. You can see how it hurt the players in Arizona when they realized that they weren't going to move on. And you could see in the players in Notre Dame, the finality of it. You can see in the post-game interviews of the losing team, the players, not really wanted to be at the table, answer questions that they really didn't want to answer because they lost. And the media, and I listened to both post-game interviews of the losing teams, and the media asked some dumb questions. To these players that were on the losing team. And they have to sit there, young kids, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, keep their composure, which is extremely hard, especially when you're on the losing side, and answer questions, answer stupid questions, that if you really thought about it, why would you ask a question that you already know the answer to? Or you're just trying to goad a player or two into a that he's going to regret. Because he knows it, and you know it, is a dumb question. But you're trying to set the player up to get a reaction, to get a negative reaction, so you can get that story and then put that player and that program in a bad light. And there are some media people out there that do that. Or just waiting for that moment. And like I said, you got 18, 19, 20-year-old, 21, 22, depending on what level of, if they're a freshman or a senior, they're in. And the closer the game, the tougher it is to answer questions if you're a losing team. If you lose by 8, 7, 10, something like that, you lost, yes. But It's not like if you lost by 1 or 2 points where you felt you were the better team, where a bounce of the basketball, a call or a non-call goes one way or the other, and you win that game. That's how close that game was between Kentucky and Notre Dame. Now we have, we got about 7 minutes left in the program. I'm going to talk about briefly about the matchups for today, which is going to be very interesting, extremely interesting. We got the University of Louisville going up against the University of Michigan State. Hell of a matchup. Let me tell you something, people. This matchup right here. First of all, I'm picking Michigan State. I just like their makeup. I watched Michigan State play the Big Ten Championship, and which I thought they should have won. It's one of those close games. It's a heartbreaking game to lose. They lost it against Wisconsin. Michigan State is a serious team, and I think they're going to be a formidable opponent if they go up against Kentucky. They're a very good team to watch, and they're going to be playing at 2:20 this afternoon to see who's going to ride into to represent the East in the Final Four. Is it going to be Michigan State or Louisville? Both these are tournament, Elite Eight coaches that have been here, done that. Like I said, both of these two coaches have been to the promised land, meaning the NCAA championship. And this is going to be a hell of a matchup to watch. And I think Michigan State is a team to beat here. I think their length and the style of play against Louisville, who at times has a hard time scoring, is going to give Michigan State's going to give Louisville fits. I just believe that. Louisville, in my opinion, is a inconsistent team and can go into a funk very quickly, and I think that can happen in this matchup. And I'm thinking Michigan State moves on. Both these guys are tournament tested. Took Wisconsin, I'm talking about Michigan State, down to the wire in the Big Ten Championship. I think Michigan State is the tougher of the two teams, and I think the road that they hold going from playing Georgia in the first round, playing Virginia in the second round, playing Oklahoma in the last round in order to get to the Elite Eight right now, and playing Louisville, is a tougher row than Louisville went and played Northern Iowa, and then played NC State. I think Michigan State has the wherewithal to win scenario, and I like them a lot. Now, the upset and surprise is in the South, in my opinion. For most part, people are thinking that it's going to be Duke going to the Final Four. Mike Krzyzewski is a storied Hall of Fame coach that has brought his Duke Blue Devils time and time again through the brackets to this point to get to the Final Four. And a lot of people think that Mike Krzyzewski and his team are going to do it again. I'm not one of those believers. I think that the University of Gonzaga, if you look at the road they went through versus the road that Duke went through, I think the Gonzaga is battle tested and ready to take that next step and get to the Final Four. Not just for my bracket, because I have Gonzaga going to the Final Four, and I did have him win a matchup against Duke, but I think Gonzaga is one of these teams that they're getting respect, but not enough respect that people think they can't beat Duke, but I think they are definitely going to beat Duke in this matchup. There's no doubt in my mind that I think that they're going to beat Duke. I just think they're a better team. Duke may have one of the best players in the country, but one player may take more than one player to win this. For the most part, so I do believe that Gonzaga can do what Utah did, but with better pieces, and double up on Jahlil Parker, and make the other four beat Gonzaga to get to the Final Four. So these two games, Michigan State against Louisville, is going to take place this afternoon around 2:30, and then following that, in the South, Gonzaga and Duke are going to match up and play about a little after 5 o'clock, and we'll see who's going to be the last two participants to move on to the Final Four. Well, we come to the end of the show. I want to thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of the week, the rest of the Sunday, I should say, and we'll talk to you next Sunday at 10 o'clock. See ya.
And we go a little something like this. Hit it. I dig it. Come on. Cold, cool, and at a bar. And I'm looking for some action. But like Mick Jagger said, I can't get no satisfaction. The girls are all around, but none of them want to get with me. My threads are fresh, and I'm looking deaf. Yo, what's up with L.O.C.? The girls are all jocking at the other end of the bar, having drinks with some no-name chump when they know that I'm a star. So I got them, the show's over, to the other side of the cantina. I asked the guy, why are you so fly? He said, Funky Comadina.